Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, August 18th, 2026. As always, let's begin with some of today's top stories. First up, Champaign Schools, Unit 4's $192 million proposal is a go. This article is written by Jeff D'Alessio and is based out of Champaign. You can reach Jeff by email at jdalessio@newsgazette.com. When early voting kicks off, less than 6 weeks from now, Unit 4 taxpayers will be asked whether they support a $192 million referendum that would rebuild an old and overcrowded Champaign Middle School, renovate another, and add a brand new one at a site to be determined. At Monday night's meeting, all seven board members voted in favor of adding to the November 3 ballot a referendum that would also bring $13 million in improvements to the district's special education services and make $26 million worth of health, life, safety-related upgrades at two schools. If passed, it would become the most expensive referendum in the history of Champaign County, edging the district's $183.4 million referendum of 10 years ago. The biggest difference between the last ballot question and the one awaiting voters in November, this one, which calls for $192 million in bonds to be paid off over the next 20 years, does not come with an increase in the district's tax rate, though it also won't bring any property tax relief for homeowners, as critics have been quick to point out. Despite the unanimous vote, not every board member was as enthusiastic in their endorsement as board president Tony Bruno. I believe this should be up to voters to decide whether this is something that they want or not. Not just seven board members, said Betsy Holder, quickly adding that she has serious reservations about the timing of the referendum, given the volatility of the bond market and the tariffs that are going up. Holder heaped praise on the 27-member facilities committee that recommended, among other things, that the district ask voters permission to spend $153 million on middle schools, including rebuilding 73-year-old Franklin on site, remodeling 66-year-old Jefferson, and removing the four portable classrooms that sit outside both of the overcapacity schools. Holder said, "We're sort of putting the cart before the horse and would have preferred that a new administration, she believes in 100%, spend a year familiarizing itself with the district's challenges before jumping to the referendum stage. We can build the fanciest buildings. We spent a lot of money on the last referendum and our schools and the performance of students continues to and has declined," she said. "Bricks and mortar aren't teaching our kids how to read." Second year board member Grace King said she agreed that our middle schools are archaic and at a point that they need to be rebuilt, not even renovated. She also recognized the value of adding a brand new middle school, though she added, "I have some reservations that some other agendas are going to be pushed with the notion that this middle school will be a middle school for folks in Southwest Champaign. I hope that doesn't happen." There was little discussion at Monday night's meeting about where a fourth middle school would be built, but Bruno told the News Gazette on Friday and reiterated on Monday's edition of the News Gazette Radio that it makes the most sense logistically to be located somewhere on the south side of Champaign. "All three of our current middle schools are pretty tightly located in the old part of town," he said. "I think the ideal location for a new middle school would be south of the central part of the city where we have a population center but no middle school." That doesn't mean the north side of Champaign is being ignored, board member Christy Arnold pointed out Monday night. It too will get a new school in Franklin Steam Academy, with plans calling for the middle school built in 1953 to be rebuilt completely at its existing location. "We are getting two new middle schools," Arnold emphasized. Whether voters green light the referendum or not, two of the items in the $192 million proposal will need to be fixed and soon. State law mandates that the district must repair all building code violations within a set time frame. the deadline to fix what District Director of Capital Planning and Projects Elizabeth Stegmeyer said were more than $11 million worth of issues at the older of International Prep Academy's two buildings is 2029. Unit 4 has 1 year after that to install a new HVAC system and make other mechanical upgrades at Garden Hills Academy, Stegmeyer said. Rather than fix all of the problems at the smaller of IPA's two buildings on West Kirby Avenue, the facilities committee recommended the district spend $20 million to demolish the old school and add a junior high wing to the four-year-old $24.3 million elementary building that sits behind it, putting K through 8 students in the same place. This part of the proposal didn't receive any pushback from board members Monday night, with Amy Armstrong saying, "The need is not going away if the referendum doesn't pass." Nor did any board member counter the committee's call for $13 million in special education improvements. Last July, 7 months before the committee's first meeting, consultant Dan Cates shared the findings of his audit of all things special education in Unit 4. It was 90 pages long and packed with 100-plus recommendations, many of them involving the clustering of services. The audit was mandated as part of a settlement agreement on behalf of a Unit 4 student with disabilities. As part of the same settlement, the district is required to enact changes or provide a written justification for why they failed to do so. I think the special education community deserves something that they haven't had in a long time, and that is the basic human rights that they have been denied in a system that has forgotten about them, Bruno said. This project will help deliver those basic human rights to those kids. Who's going to argue with that? It's beyond overdue, quote unquote. And there's one photograph that accompanies this article. It's of a kind of a high angle looking down at 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people sitting at tables that are in a semicircle. They have nameplates in front of them, and it's of the board. There's an American flag in the background. The caption reads, "At Monday's meeting, all 7 members of the Champaign School Board voted in favor of adding a $192 million referendum to the November 3rd ballot." That photo is provided by Unit 4 Schools. Inside, U of I graduate student charged with felony for allegedly vandalizing flock cameras. We'll get to that in just a moment. And first up, severe weather, floodwater woes. Teen driver found dead in waters 2 days after 911 call. This article is written by Jana Wiersema, who can be reached by email at jwiersema@newsgazette.com. This article is out of Dewey. A 17-year-old boy from Rantoul who got into an accident while driving in a flood Saturday night has been found dead. Champaign County Coroner Lori Brower has identified the teen as Elias A. Smith. He was pronounced dead at the scene at 12:40 p.m. Monday. The cause and manner of death remain pending the results of an autopsy and further investigation, the coroner's office said. Smith's body was located at approximately 11:30 a.m. Monday in water about 1 mile from his vehicle left, where his vehicle left the roadway, the Champaign County Sheriff's Office said. At approximately 4:50 p.m. Saturday, Metcalf 911 was notified of a car that had left the roadway on County Road 1000 East at approximately 2850 North near Dewey in Condit Township. The driver reported that the car was filling up with water. First responders from several local police and fire departments were dispatched to the scene and arrived about 10 minutes after the call was received. By that time, Metcalf had already lost contact with the driver, the sheriff's office said. A search for both the vehicle and driver began immediately, with first responders starting with a large drainage ditch at the scene. A submerged vehicle was removed from the flooded ditch about 11 a.m. Sunday, about 24 hours after the driver was found separately or sorry, Sunday, about 24 hours before the driver was found separately, officials said. We extend our deep condolences to the family, the sheriff's office said. We would like to also thank the multiple departments and resources that came together to assist the sheriff's office in the search. These included, it's a long list, excuse me, Sangamon Valley Fire Protection District, Corn Belt Fire Protection District, Corn Belt Dive and Rescue Team, Mahomet Police Department, Rantoul Fire Department, the Rantoul Police Department, El Paso, Illinois Dive Rescue Team, Illinois Conservation Police, Champaign County Search and Rescue Volunteers, Champaign Police Department, University of Illinois Police Department, Champaign County Emergency Management Agency, Aero Ambulance Service, AirLife, the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, EMS agencies, ATVs, drones, and boats equipped with sonar were used during the search, officials said. The next headline reads, heavy rains sparked some panic in Gibson City, Paxton, and Fisher, but caused minimal damage. This article is written by Luke Taylor and is based out of Gibson City. You can reach Luke by email at ltaylor@newsgazette.com. 2 days after heavy rainstorms started in east central Illinois, the northern part of Champaign County was back to being mostly navigable by car, but the floodwaters hadn't completely receded. Excuse me, fields are still submerged in feet of standing water, as are various yards across Gibson City and Paxton. Mark Brown knows a thing or two about that. There was already standing water in his backyard at 3 a.m. Saturday, which is when he went out to the garage to start putting things on higher shelves. The water, it just kept going up and up and up, and then the whole garage was flooded and part of the driveway was also flooded, Brown said. North State Street, where the Brown family lives, is significantly more elevated than the backyard, but water still rose up along the driveway. Still, this wasn't as bad as 5 years ago, when up to 11 inches of rain fell on Gibson City in the span of a few hours. After that, Brown bought a pump, which he had running on Monday. His yard and the field behind it still had at least a foot of standing water, and even more in some places. This is the first time I've had to use it, so I mean that's a good thing, but it's just frustrating, he said. After the city performed a study on flooding, Brown hoped something would be done about the area behind his house, but he said nothing seems to have changed. Over on the other side of town, on Guthrie Street, Marin Parsons said she felt the same. It seems to both her and Brown that the same parts of Gibson City flood any time there's a hard rain. Our street and the street over are notoriously bad, Parsons said. My husband and my neighbor both were up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, already starting to panic and worry about whether it was going to get in the garage. As of Monday, Parsons was still dealing with water in the house's crawl space. But fortunately, flooding hadn't come high enough up the driveway to get into the garage. We knew it was pretty bad early that morning, and then it just steadily kept raining and kept getting higher, Parsons said. The backyard was completely flooded. Her son inflated a kayak and went paddling around on the street. Parsons said water runs off of a nearby field and between nearby houses to pool on Guthrie Street and Gray Drive, pooling quickly in a hard rain. The Falcon Point subdivision is another area prone to flooding. Shannon Maxey, who lives over there, said that she avoided basement flooding this time, but that the neighborhood was hit pretty hard. Her family wasn't able to get out of the house until late in the afternoon Saturday. Over in Fisher, Mayor Mike Baylor said that he woke up early Saturday morning to news of Owl Creek already flooding out of its banks. He had no idea that such a big storm was coming when he went to bed. He got right up, called Public Works employees, his son and some other guys, and got to work. We got out and about, and grabbed grabbed some of the barricades and stuff so we could make sure that nobody was putting themselves in danger, Baylor said. From the city's perspective, the primary concern was clearing roadways and making sure that nobody ended up in trouble trying to travel through flooded routes. Well, he said that the city could probably make improvements on a few areas that end up flooding in any hard rain. He was pretty pleased to say that none of the water stood up very long. At the end of the day, he said, there's only so much the city can do to help prevent or clear up floodwater. By Monday, a few big puddles represented the last of the flooding around Fisher, and Baylor had yet to hear about any residents seeing major damage due to the rain. I feel for the people this happened to. It happened to me some 30 years ago, Baylor said. You never want it to happen again, but it's hard to stop Mother Nature sometimes. Even after the city itself was mostly dried out, Baylor said Public Works employees were hydrojetting some drains in the area to keep water running off a area, farmland, that saw significant flooding, too. And there's two photographs that accompany this article. One is a view from a back porch looking out into a backyard that's just flooded with water. That caption reads, Mark Brown's backyard in the 200 block of 4th Street, Gibson City, remains mostly submerged by floodwaters on Monday. And then there's another picture of, looks like it's taken from a street that's looking into a large yard that's flooded. The caption reads, the city of Paxton placed a pump to clear several backyards along North Elm Street. Yes, now I see the pump. There's a barricade that's hopefully collecting the water. These photos are taken by Luke Taylor for the News Gazette. Next up, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. The Champaign County Farm Bureau Women's Committee has been doing good things for a long time in these parts. That includes once a month sewing sessions in the Farm Bureau's auditorium that result in blankets, bibs, and walker bags that are then donated for good causes. It's not a sweat factory, said Paulette Brock of Champaign. When our backs give out from leaning over sewing machines, that's when we call it a day. Brock, 80, is one of about 30 women, retirement age and up, who make up a group known for its fun and philanthropy. They bake desserts to raise money at the Farm Bureau Foundation's annual gala. 22 women make up the Baker Hall of Fame. They pass a hat for a charitable donation each Christmas. Maybe it's a few hundred dollars, but it still makes a difference, Brock said. They spread the word about all things ag on their many field trips. Next month's stop, Country Fresh in White Heath. We are vibrant women interested in agriculture who value social friendships as well, said Brock, who joined in 2009 after retiring from her job at Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System. It boils down to women having fun together. We forged a lot of friendships over the years. Interested in joining the group? Call the Farm Bureau at the following phone number, 217-352-5235. That's 217-352-5235. And there's one photograph that accompanies this article. It is of the group. There is a front row of women sitting and then a group behind them. Radio personality Mike Hale was the featured speaker at this month's Champaign County Farm Bureau Women's Committee gathering. And I don't know where he's at in the photo. It looks mostly like the women in the group. Looks like they just had a picture taken. That photo is provided. Questions, comments, suggestions, you can always reach out to Jim Rosso through his email address, JROSSOW@newsgazette.com. Now, history. Area history. In 1926, Dorothy Groves, former proprietor of a cafe in Champaign, was fined $100 and given 2 weeks to leave town in connection with her arrest for illegal possession of liquor and driving while intoxicated. An officer had witnessed her driving an erratic zigzag course down South First Street. and arrested her after she started into a house with a quart of gin under her arm. It was not her first such offense. In 1976, proposed amendments to Champaign's and Urbana's franchise agreement with the local cable TV firm will offer no great surprises, according to one owner of the company, CU Communications, Inc. It is seeking an increase over the originally proposed $6 per month cable service fee due to costs of fighting a recently settled lawsuit brought by Midwest Television, Inc. That was $6 per month in 1976. In 2011, the Champaign County Board is now on record in support of Midwest High-Speed Rail, calling on Congress to include a program to develop an integrated network of high-speed trains and expanded Amtrak service in the upcoming transportation authorization. The board voted 15-8 for the resolution. Republicans Jonathan Schroeder and Brad Jones joined with all the board's Democrats in support of the resolution. Supporters argued that high-speed rail would be an economic development boost for the nation, the state, and Champaign County. Champaign Democrat Michael Richard said private investors are interested in American high-speed rail. But Republicans suggested the state and federal government's fiscal woes made the project impossible. "We don't have the money, folks," quote-unquote. "It's not there," or quote-unquote, said St. Joseph area Republican Aaron Esri. International history, today's highlight. On August 18, 1920, the 19th Amendment to the Constitution, guaranteeing American women's right to vote, was ratified as Tennessee became the 36th state to approve it. Also on this date, in 1590, John White, the governor of the Roanoke Island Colony in present-day North Carolina, returned to Roanoke after nearly 3 years abroad, only to find the settlement deserted. The fate of the lost colony remains a mystery. Now let's take a look at our weather forecast for the next few days. Today, 81 degrees. Mostly sunny, west winds around 5 miles per hour. Overnight, mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Southwest winds around 5 miles per hour. Wednesday, more rain. The high will be 79, the low is 66. Partly sunny with a 50% chance of showers, a chance of afternoon thunderstorms. West winds around 5 miles per hour. Overnight, partly cloudy. Thursday, the high will be 79, the low is 62, partly cloudy. Friday, the high is 80, the low is 60, mostly sunny. Saturday, again, the high will be 80, the low is 63, mostly sunny with a 30% chance of showers, a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Next up, Champaign City Council contract for asbestos survey of condemned site up for vote. Officials want to be prepared in case city must handle demolition. This article is written by Jana Wiersema, who can be reached by email at jwiersema@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Champaign. Demolition of a condemned and vacant apartment complex could begin as early as mid-October, with the city gearing up to handle the work in the event that the property owner fails to meet established deadlines for clearing the site. The City Council is scheduled to vote tonight on whether to approve an approximately $35,000 contract with True North Consultants of Naperville to conduct an asbestos survey and testing on the Champaign Park apartments. Because the buildings present a danger to public safety, staff is preparing to be positioned to begin demolition as soon as possible in the event that deadlines are missed, Code Compliance Manager Tim Spear wrote in a report to the City Council. He added that the city would be authorized to begin demolition as early as October 14, 2026, if the property owner has not applied for a permit by then. The asbestos survey is the first step of the city's preparations, as the results would have to be included in bidding documents if the city needs to find a contractor for demolition. The city has been dealing with livability issues at the apartment complex since late 2022, when boiler failures left hundreds of residents without heat during frigid conditions, according to a previous report by city attorney Thomas Yu. A December 2022 fire in a 12-unit apartment building at 206 Kenwood Road within the complex also led to residents being displaced. Attorney Kelly Gandersky with Elrod Friedman LLP, which represented the city in its suit, wrote in an October 2025 filing that the property had been abandoned by its owner, Champaign Apartment Owners LLC, since approximately April of 2025. By June of 2025, all 29 apartment buildings in the complex, which totaled 504 units, had been condemned, according to Neighborhood Services Director Rob Kowalski. One was later demolished in April of 2026 after sustaining damage in a fire. The city and the complex's owner agreed to a settlement in spring 2026, which requires that the complex must be fully demolished by May of 2027 and sets deadlines for various steps along the way. According to Speer, the agreement requires the owner or purchaser of the property to apply for a demolition permit by October 13, 2026, and begin the work by December 4, 2026. If any of the deadlines are missed, the city is authorized to proceed with the demolition work. Although these dates have not yet occurred, advance work is required by the city to be prepared to demolish the buildings in the event the owner does not demolish the buildings by the deadline set forth in the consent decree, Speer said. City staff are finalizing a schedule for the asbestos survey in conjunction with the police department, which will inspect the structures to ensure safety. The cost of police overtime is estimated at a little over $13,000, Speer said. As for the asbestos survey, the neighborhood services budget includes funding for the abatement of the Champaign Park Apartments complex. There is a tight timeline to complete the asbestos survey and prepare demolition bid documents ahead of the established demolition deadlines prescribed in the consent decree, Speer said, later adding that the analysis is expected to be conducted in late August and take less than 1 week to complete. Also on tonight's City Council agenda, votes to adopt the Homelessness Prevention Blueprint as an official council policy and amend the budget to fund programs outlined in the blueprint. Also, a vote to adopt the Housing Needs Analysis and Strategy as an official council policy. Also, a proposed $400,000 change order with Clark Dietz, Inc., on design engineering services for the Park Avenue reconstruction project, which runs from Neal Street to Randolph Street and is not expected to begin until spring 2027, wrote civil engineer David Happ. The increase is to account for changes to the scope of work and would bring the firm's contract amount to $1.22 million. A proposed engineering services contract with Donahue and Associates, Inc., with a not-to-exceed amount of $78,530 for a campus town sanitary sewer master plan. And to note, this story and the stories I read today contain original reporting by News Gazette staff. If you're not a subscriber, please consider becoming one, because local journalism is only possible with your support. A subscription to the News Gazette plays a vital role in making this reporting possible. Thank you for your support and helping us continue to connect our community. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, August 18th, 2026. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back to read part two of the News Gazette with you shortly. Thanks for listening and have a wonderful day.